Okay, the doors are shutting, so we may as well get started. I'm Andrew Husko. I'm just going to introduce Thomas. You'll see originally we had Thomas and Thomas Tudehope and Roger Christie coming. Unfortunately, we only got Thomas here today. Thomas also misread and said we've got 15-minute session rather than a 50-minute session, so everyone might get an early lunch break, unless, of course, there's lots of questions. But we've asked Thomas particularly to talk very slowly. So, being someone who actually finally joined Facebook about 15 months ago and check on it once every couple of months, more to check what my daughter's doing, I don't know how to get onto Twitter. And I'm not on LinkedIn either, so it makes it rather difficult to be an expert on this, so I'm interested to see what Thomas has got. So Thomas is one of Australia's most recognised social media strategists. Thomas pioneered the use of social media and online activism in Australian politics through his work with Malcolm Turnbull as a cabinet minister when he was leader of the opposition and as he's a member for Whitworth. During that time, Malcolm Turnbull's online presence was regarded as best practice and was officially recognised by the Australian Internet Industry Association. Thomas has extensive experience managing small and large social media campaigns that seek to raise awareness, drive sales, and increase exposure. Moreover, Thomas often conducts social media workshops that seek to educate a variety of stakeholders on social media best practice, how to handle dissent, and what social media measurement can do for an organisation. Thomas regularly appears as a commentator across all the TV networks on a variety of issues, including social networking, politics, and the media. Thomas is also a regular contributor to the opinion sites The Drum and The Punch, and I'm hoping he'll explain exactly what The Drum and The Punch are. Welcome, Thomas.
All right, so I've got a brief presentation, so we can go through that, but I'm happy to open it up for a wider discussion or more feedback or questions about social media. It's not the easiest issue to get around, especially for many of you who are working as actuaries. I'm sure many of the workplaces you have are still struggling to get to grips with how social media works. And what its application is for business, and how you can also use it on a professional basis. So, hopefully, we can cover off a few of those things. So, how many people in the room are on Twitter? Oh, I've got a fair few. Okay, and how many are on LinkedIn? All right, most of you. And Facebook. Wow. All right, and how many of you who has a blog? Oh, two blogs, okay. And who reads blogs that are related to your work or your industry? Okay, a few more. So some of the work that I've been doing with Ogilvy and with the Actuaries Institute has been around increasing the Institute's online presence, some education for Melinda and others around best practice using social media tools, and also a little bit of discussion around what's out there for actuaries and what you can do. So I think from a business perspective, there's probably a little bit of misinformation about what social media is, how it works, and what you can do. And I think too many people, rightly or wrongly, think it's overwhelming and try and engage in too many of these social media platforms. You've got Twitter, you've got LinkedIn, you've got blogs, you've got all these other things that are going on. In reality, it's probably better just to focus on one or two, do it really well, and try and leverage some of that social media presence for your own professional expertise and for your own success. And then once you are more comfortable with these things, and then you can move on and try different things. So my background is primarily in media and politics, and I'm certainly not an advocate of overdoing things. I think it's much better to do things that you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable doing social media, don't do it. I think there's a huge risk of things going wrong. A lot of the stuff out there is very public, can easily go viral, can do damage to your personal brand, can do damage to your career prospects and also your company. So I think it's far better to take these things one step at a time, understand the landscape, understand how the tools work, and then engage in a way that you're going to be comfortable with. So here are some of the benefits, I think, of social media. I think now in Australia we're getting to the stage where we have almost 11 million plus people on Facebook, or it's almost getting close to 12 million. So if you think about those who are under 13 who can't start a profile, or those who are aged over 60 or 70, you're essentially looking at almost the vast majority of the population have a Facebook account. LinkedIn is probably a platform that's becoming more relevant. There's almost 2 to 3 million Australians now on LinkedIn. And as a platform, it's becoming easier to use and has more functionalities to business. I think most people probably perceive it's just a way of putting your CV online. There's actually a lot more to it than that, especially if you go and join groups and discussions. And many people here joining have joined a group or a discussion on LinkedIn that's related to the actuaries. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, it's a few more. So the Actuaries Institute's got a company page and a group, which is useful to use. And there's also some industry-specific ones, but we can touch on those a bit later. So, and also you have Twitter, which I think in terms of a influencer medium, in terms of influencing news, getting expertise and leveraging your personal profile is also a good one. But I think the danger with Twitter is that it can be a very nasty medium, and the conversation moves quite quickly, and it's one that probably takes a little bit more effort and time if you're going to get it right. So in terms of actuary industry activity, these are probably two of the more prominent examples of actuaries who are using social media tools. Jennifer's not in the room, is she? No. So I was going to be effusive with praise. No, so Jennifer runs a very successful blog called The Actuarial Eye, which some of you might have read. So who's read Jennifer's blog? Yeah, a few. Okay, so it's updated quite regularly. It's got a lot of good content on there. It's probably worth a visit. And Stephen's someone who's active on Twitter, and he tweets a lot about actuary-related issues. Now, although you might think that discussing actuarial-related issues is probably not a hot topic on social media, you're actually wrong. There's a lot of stuff out there that is quite useful between people who are tweeting about stuff from a few blogs like Jennifer's, but also a lot of people who are on LinkedIn. Who identify as actuaries, and also companies who are engaging, who might seek to engage an actuary, or might have some sort of business relevance to what an actuary actually does. So there are some discussions out there. It's simply a matter of finding them, getting yourself involved in the relevant ones, engaging with the right people, and then putting out the right sort of content. So what's in it for you? I think there are a number of different benefits for social media. And as I said, I think you want to be able to do what is most comfortable to your own time, your own effort and your own inclination. If you don't want to do Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, I don't think you should do it until at the time you're ready. Personally, I think the best one for those of you working as an actuary is, I think the best one is LinkedIn. It has the most long-term benefit in terms of career advancement, in terms of leveraging your expertise, in terms of relating to your peers and having meaningful discussions with your colleagues and peers. I think LinkedIn is the best. Although the conversation doesn't move as fast as Facebook or Twitter, I think you're more likely to engage in a conversation that actually has some meaning. A lot of the stuff on Twitter or Facebook peaks very quickly, can be a very quick conversation, but in terms of actually getting some substance out of it, I think LinkedIn is probably the best platform of choice. But also there's the opportunity to obviously leverage your experience and your expertise. I think people are now turning more than ever to social media to get information. Trust in mainstream media is probably on the wane. You only have to look at the way in which newspapers, mainstream media outlets, TV are sort of fading to see that things are moving towards social media. Now, I don't think blogs or Twitter profiles are ever going to overtake newspapers or TV. But the way in which they relate to each other and the balance between a TV network or a radio or a newspaper or a blog is probably becoming a little bit more more shared in terms of the share of voice that they have online. And I think especially those people who have quite big Twitter profiles, you know, in excess of 100,000, do tend to generate a lot of influence. And also, I think finally, there's probably your professional identity online. I think most people at least have some sort of profile online. The more complete your profile is, it's easier going to be for search purposes, and also creating that holistic presence that's going to give you some sort of advantage going down the track. So as I said, the best place to start is probably LinkedIn. Now, there are a number of different opportunities on your personal page, also joining different groups and discussions. So as you can see there, there are sort of 3,500, almost 4,000 people who identify themselves as actuaries and who work in Australia. And I think the beauty of LinkedIn is that you can really, if you're searching for someone or if you're searching for a topic, you can really narrow that topic quite down quite specifically. You can find people who are on a certain level of education or on a certain level of position within an organisation or through keywords. So you can find people who are possibly interested in actuary or who are an actuary or who are involved in discussions. So, you know, a lot of the time you might have to navigate around a bit, search to a few different groups and a few different companies. But in terms of personal information, LinkedIn probably garners more information than any other site, although Facebook, it's very personal. People put up things about family and photos and stuff like that. But for someone who's got a complete LinkedIn profile, there's a huge wealth of information out there about that person, about their professional expertise, about industry prospects, what career path they might be looking for, and any sort of groups and discussions that they may be participating in, which for you, if you're looking for connecting with peers or colleagues, that presents a really, really good opportunity. And also, there's the recruitment thing. Now, personally, I think recruiters are a bit of a pain in the proverbial when it comes to using LinkedIn. They tend to scour through groups and scour through discussions and try and connect with people on a pretty regular basis. But if you're setting up a company page or if you're setting up a group or if you're participating in a discussion, it's quite easy to exclude people who are recruiters. And that way you can probably have a more meaningful discussion or you can probably connect with people more, you know, in a better kind of way. But it's quite easy to do that and avoid the recruitment that goes on throughout LinkedIn. All right, so here are some very simple tips or some steps that you can take. So completing your profile is probably the easiest and simplest way, whether this is on Twitter or on Facebook or on LinkedIn, or for those of you who have got a blog, completing your profile. So, you know, things like having a photo, including your full biography, including all your skills, recommendations, and building up your connections is probably the next one there. So this is obviously with colleagues and clients. A good way to do this with LinkedIn is to, a good tip that I often do is to try and connect with someone directly after a meeting. That way it adds a little bit more relevance to the online connection. So I think a lot of people get a lot of random connections from people who they don't actually know. But if you tee up with someone on LinkedIn before or after a meeting and say, you know, it was really nice to meet you, you know, look forward to continuing our relationship or I hope to connect with you here on LinkedIn to find a bit more value or something like that, it adds a little bit more personal flavour and a bit more relevance to that connection. So you're probably getting a little bit more out of your LinkedIn profile. The third one is finding industry-specific groups or relevant discussions. Now, as I said at the start, there are plenty of those out there about actuaries and about actuarial studies, especially around career prospects and also some industry-specific ones as well. Adjusting your email settings to avoid spam. LinkedIn sends a torrent of emails, so it's quite easy to go in and adjust your settings so you can turn off the emails you get. I find it only relevant to get the ones where someone's connecting to me or someone sent me a private message. You know, I don't really want to get all the email notifications about a new discussion topic or someone who might be relevant to me. I think it's much easier to manage. I think most people get enough emails during the day from colleagues and friends not to have 25 or so from LinkedIn. So it's just an easy thing to manage. And also, if you want to, for those who are a bit more technologically inclined, setting up LinkedIn on your tablet device or mobile, another easy way to manage it, to manage things on the go, to follow discussions or follow company pages or follow groups as you may see fit. And then the final one, of course, is to join the Institute's LinkedIn company page or group, and you can participate in discussions there, which have just kicked off over the last week. And also, which I'm sure the video series will also be up there in no short space of time. And you can also find Melinda on there, sitting up the front, who's got a very active profile. And it's a good example of someone's profile who is up to date and well maintained. And on that note, I'm happy to take any broad questions, social media or otherwise.
Yeah, I was going to say, just, if you could just state your name and company, and please use the microphone.
Yeah, we're
recording it.
Okay, Donna Walker. What's your view on connecting to people that you don't know? Because LinkedIn is a good network, and you do get thousands of people coming through and saying, I want to connect, I want to connect. Do you have a view as to how you manage that?
Yeah, I think there are, so the question was about connecting with people who you don't know. My view is, I think you can approach this in two ways. You can either ignore them, and, you know, I really don't know why people connect with people they don't know. I don't understand why you would go to someone's LinkedIn profile who you have might have two people who are in common with and you connect with. I don't understand it. So the way I approach it is, if I'll check out their biography or what their company is, and if it's of no relevance to me, I'll just click ignore. If it is possibly of some relevance to me or to my, you know, some work I might have done or work I could do, I'll send them back a short email. So if once you get a connection in your inbox, if you reply to that email, you don't actually have to go into LinkedIn. It'll automatically go into their email inbox, which is an easier way, so you don't have to actually go into LinkedIn to reply. So what I'll often do is I'll reply to them with a short email saying, you know, thanks for connecting, do we know each other, you know, or, you know, looking forward to discussing with you, was there anything in particular you'd like to discuss with me? And that way it might trigger some sort of conversation. They might actually say, oh, yeah, I was hoping to get in touch with you about X, Y, and Z. Or if they don't respond, it probably means they're just fishing around LinkedIn to get more connections. So, you know, I think what a lot of people do is they go onto LinkedIn and they want to have a profile that has 500-plus connections. Now, that actually doesn't mean much. You know, a good LinkedIn profile has someone who's got a lot of recommendations or endorsements. So, you know, recommendations where your specific skills have been endorsed, or you've got actually a written recommendation from someone who has worked with you and said, you know, I worked with Melinda on this project and she was excellent and she added a lot of value to our business. That's much more valuable to a person's profile than having 500 plus connections. And I think, you know, if LinkedIn's taking up too much of your time, or if you don't know the value of it, I would just be ignoring those connections from people who you don't actually know. More often than not, they're just probably just people fishing around to get more connections. Good question, though.
I've got a question on the, is it the endorsements? I mean, they've started sort of getting a bit spammy, those endorsements. So every time I get in, there's like, would you endorse these eight people? And and you can hit an endorse all button, then it gives you another eight and another eight. And like, you can spend all day endorsing people. But I mean, do they carry any weight anymore?
Yeah, they carry a little bit of weight in terms of search. You know, search is definitely important. So if someone's searching for someone who has a specific skill set, I think it's good to have those endorsements for those specific skills. I think for your own personal profile, I think it's good to add all the different skills that you have. It'll increase your profile in search and make your profile more visible. But I wouldn't go around recommending everybody or endorsing everybody just because it pops up on your screen. And, you know, it does get a bit annoying that they keep popping up. But I think the danger is, someone you've worked with gets into some sort of criminal trouble, hypothetically, and you've gone and given them an endorsement or a recommendation on LinkedIn that says, I worked with someone, they were fantastic, you know, never dealt with someone more honest in my life, you know, just to gild the lily a bit. I think that's what you've got to be wary of. So I would only give people recommendations or endorsements where you're quite confident, not that they're never going to do anything wrong, but that at that very point in time that it was the endorsement or recommendation you're giving is faithful to the black letter, and there's no danger in overdoing it or coming back to bite you. So, you know, I think people go around hunting for these recommendations and endorsements. So I would be a little bit circumspect about doing them. I think that, you know, the endorsement of a skill set's probably relatively low risk, but where it comes to a written recommendation about work you might have done with someone, I think that's where you've got to be particularly wary about what you say and who you give your recommendations and endorsements to. So.
Great. Thanks, Tommy. That's an excellent presentation. Wade Madison, sorry. I guess one of the questions that always sort of comes into my mind is, with all this social media and kind of using that more actively, there's this real blurring between a personal brand and a professional brand. And I'm just interested in your insights around, you know, how you think you optimize that, how you blend those two and manage them in the right sort of way, in that type of environment.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. I think it's especially hard for the financial services industry, where they're probably a little bit they've been far more reluctant to engage in tools online. My personal view is that you should put your personal brand first and your professional brand second, and then they'll naturally relate to each other. So if you seek to advance your career by using online tools to enhance your personal brand, I think that's the best way to go about it. You're not always going to be at company X or company Y, and I think the company you work at should support you in promoting your online identity. Now, the danger is that if you work for a company and they haven't got a very effective social media policy in place, you might be going out there and saying things in the online arena that might get you in trouble or might get the company in trouble. But I think you have to look after your personal brand first, but also exert a little bit of caution about what you're putting online, and also seek guidance and seek support from the business that you work with to use the tools correctly to make sure that you're putting what you're putting out there online is correct. And it's also going to reflect well on the company, but you can't have them separate. You know, it's in an ideal world, people want their business life or their personal life separate to what they do at work. But if you have a Twitter profile and you're tweeting about work 90% of the time, and then you want to talk about other stuff in the other 10%, you can't have two different profiles. It doesn't work that way. I think having a balance is fine, but you know, I think the more a business supports in terms of education, in terms of giving people the right tools, they're more likely to get people who are using it correctly, and there's going to be a residual benefit. Those people who are online are going to naturally promote the work that they do, and that's going to have some sort of flow-on effect to the business, ideally. So, it's not an easy thing to navigate through. Most companies are still struggling to do it, especially financial services companies. I think they're still struggling to realise how the benefit of what social media is for them. I think there's too much of a mindset that social media is all about Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, when there's actually a really good business benefit from doing things like blogs and LinkedIn and advancing your own career path and getting thought leadership out there. I think that's the tricky area to navigate. But, personal first, professional second is my view.
Yeah, Alan Greenfield. This is not meant to be sarcastic, but I guess I'm not quite sure of the point of it all. If it's just, at least for me personally, if I'm not interested in leaving my company, then perhaps I'm not so interested in building a personal brand.
Yep.
So then we're a consulting firm, so it'd be good to win work via this media. But I don't see that we would win any work. You know, do you see advantages to, you know, individuals in consulting firms having an online presence so that they somehow win work from?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's an ability to enhance relationships through social tools. Now, I completely accept that you might not get the point of it, even though it's my day-to-day job. Sometimes I dwell on the same fact. You know, it is a bit, it can be a bit excessive, can be a bit all-encompassing, it's can be a bit petty at times, can lack meaning. And I think definitely there's rightly or wrongly a perception, what's the whole point behind it. But I think if you use a tool like LinkedIn correctly, putting aside Twitter and Facebook and all the other ones, I think there's a real ability to enhance your existing relationships with clients. So you might be able to get more work out of them down the track, or to reach out to people who could provide you with potential work. Now, I'm not suggesting you go on LinkedIn and go and hunt down potential clients and go, you know, love to get some work out of you, let's talk. But I think if you're participating in a LinkedIn discussion or if you're participating in a LinkedIn group, I think you're at least getting some visibility out there where people know about you, what your personal work is and your company brand, and that's some sort of exposure. And I think you can then enhance a relationship or at least connect with someone to start a discussion. That might lead to some more work. But, you know, equally, networking events or things like this are equally as relevant or might present more opportunities than social media. So I think that comes back to one of my original points was, if you're not comfortable doing it, don't do it. yes, I think you might be missing out on some opportunities, but it's not the end of the world. Yep, definitely. And that is certainly applicable for some industries and some people who have distinct career paths. I still think there is some value for most people to do at least something, to at least have some visibility and some online presence, whether it's enhancing an existing relationship or improving one, or at least gaining some insight, might be insight into competitors or discussions or the way the industry is moving. I think there's some value there. But again, it's what you're comfortable with.
Hi, Elaine Grace. I just wanted to ask the difference between kind of LinkedIn and LinkedIn Premium and just which companies or recruitment firms are using those and why.
Yep. So LinkedIn Premium, if you look at someone's LinkedIn account, it'll normally have like either a number one or it'll have a little icon next to it, like a little gold four-dot symbol. That means they've got a LinkedIn Premium account, and the Premium account costs $10 extra a month. It gives you more features, like sending more messages between other profiles, but it also gives you the ability to look at who is looking at your profile. So if someone is looking at my profile, because I've got a Premium account, I can exactly see who they are or what industry they are or what their privacy settings are set to. But with a normal account, you can't actually do that. That's probably the big distinction. Every recruiter's got a Premium account because they actually need to see that sort of detail. Most companies go for either a company page or a group. Now, surprisingly, some companies have actually got quite a big presence. I think if you look at the bigger companies, most of them have LinkedIn profiles with in excess of about 50,000 people following the page. So if that's a huge audience to talk to, and if they update that page as a company with career opportunities or thought leadership or news about the company, that's a really good way to get a message out there. But back to the Premium account, it's not essential. You know, I think it's useful for me personally. I like to see who's stalking me.
Martin Mulk here. Just to Alan's question, whilst I also am a fan of picking up the phone, there are occasions where if you're meeting someone first time, it's a prospective client or someone's moved in the role, being able to have a look at the LinkedIn profile, give you some clues about them. And the other thing, if they've got a manageable number of connections, not like Melinda's 500+, being able to have a look at whether it be existing client, potential client, who are their connections, you might get some insight into which competitors they're already dealing with, or for that matter, having your competitors and having a look who are some of their contacts can just give you a bit of insight into those networks. So I'm not an expert, but useful, although I'm a bit of a sicko, but you know, even just being able to be aware of who's who and just getting some insights.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and especially if you're going to meet someone, a potential new business, you can see who they're connected to, what their exact title is, what recent work they may have done. I think that's, you know, useful insight in terms of moving forward.
I've also got a question though. The groups, someone invited me to it, an invitation only group, whereas most of the groups are open. Just your view on the relative merits of invitation only versus open ones?
So I think invitation only is a really good way to go because the person who controls that group can limit who the membership is. So say hypothetically, I only wanted a group that was restricted to people who are working as an actuary, a bit like the page that the Institute has. That way you can exclude people who are working as recruiters or people who are working in a different industry that may be looking to penetrate that group to gain insight or to recruit people or to advertise. So I think if you are looking to start a group based on a conversation or discussion topic that is relatively niche, I would go for a locked group. If you have an open group, yes, your membership will probably be higher, but you're opening yourself up to far more disparate comments and disparate discussion topics, and you never know who's going to join that group, and it might be harder to control and moderate. I think that's probably the basic pros and cons of a closed group, but from your perspective, I think a closed group is probably the way to go.
Joshua Corrigan from Milliman. I just wanted to make a comment more than anything. From a risk management perspective, one of the things we're trying to do is facilitate communities and networks of people involved in risk management. And we're finding it's quite useful to use LinkedIn, particularly the closed group discussion, invite-only discussions, as a really useful platform to kick off those discussions. It's just it's an easier mechanism to have an ongoing discussion whereby we can bring in different people from different communities, particularly if they're internationally based as well. So I was just wondering, do you see one of the risks, I guess, is that if people don't have the email settings set appropriately, they might necessarily be getting emails and actively participating or know about some of those discussions. So I was just wondering if you had any comments on how to make those closed group discussions effective across a wide range of people, because I think they've got a lot of potential to facilitate discussions.
Yeah, definitely. I think the onus is on the moderators or the owners of the page to keep the discussion going. You know, LinkedIn is a slower platform than Facebook and Twitter. It doesn't move as fast. But if you're starting a discussion, if you're managing a discussion or a page, I think the onus lies on you to keep that discussion going and keep it on topic. So if it tends to go off topic, to bring it back with a new post or a new discussion board or a new comment on the thread. I think that's a really good way to do it. And also informing people from the outset, this is our community page. We're here to discuss A, B, and C. You know, look forward to hearing your feedback. And then encouraging people to manage their own email settings so they can get whatever they want. So some people want to know when every single comment is posted. You know, they want to keep coming back and following a discussion. Whereas some people only want to know when a new discussion is started, or they might want to get a weekly summary. So I think the weekly summary is a good way to go. That way, you know, you can see what's happened during the week and you can pick and choose which discussions you want to go into. But, yeah, as I said, LinkedIn's a bit slower than Twitter and Facebook, but I think revisiting it once or twice a week is probably going to be enough to maintain that conversation and keep up to date with what's been going on.
Jamie Reed, thanks for the presentation. I'm inspired to go and update my LinkedIn profile now. You've mentioned I've got to have a nice picture and I've got to keep it up to date. But
you're a good-looking guy, so it shouldn't be a problem.
I was going to use your one. Look, could you just say a few more things? So what's the best LinkedIn page you've ever seen? What's on it?
With the basics with LinkedIn, a good professional photo. Now, you know, you don't want to have a wooden political...
And we're taking them upstairs, so if you haven't got one yet, stop in at the booth.
So you don't want a wooden political one, or you don't want one of you chugging down a beer on the weekend. It's got to be simple and effective. Also, you want to have a correct headline. So the headline is the first thing someone's going to see. So, you know, in Melinda's case, I think it's got CEO, Actuaries Institute. That headline is really important to get a first glimpse of what someone does or what they work as. And then you want a pretty good summary of your experience. So I think you can only just see it. You can see Melinda's summary down there. So it's three or four paragraphs. It's short. It's to the point. It explains her whole professional experience and basically what she's hoping to get out of LinkedIn. It doesn't say that explicitly, but intuitively someone who reads that knows exactly why Melinda's on LinkedIn, what sort of discussions she might be participating in, what sort of career opportunities she might be presenting to herself or presenting to others. So I think headline, image, and then you want to get your experience. So I think it's fine to list every single job you've had and give each a pretty good description of the work you've done in that job. Now, if you worked in McDonald's when you were 16, probably don't need to put that one in there, but everything that you've done post-university that is directly related to your current job, I would put those in there and a brief summary, only a paragraph of exactly what you've done and the skills that you've had. And then after that, go out there and find connections. So people you've worked with previously, people, friends that you know, that's fine. And then that way you'll be able to sort of get a web of connections. But photo, headline, summary, experience, probably the four things I would concentrate on.
Wade Madison again. I guess one thing that I sort of strikes me, or I'm curious about, just to get your insight into, Tommy, is, you know, like 5 years ago if we were sitting here, then half these platforms wouldn't have even been as well developed as they are now. So yep. The rate of, you know, the speed at which these things are evolving and changing seems to be very rapid, and the way they're going through that, you know, traditional product life cycle is quite accelerated. What are your sort of thoughts or, you know, views on, you know, 5 years from now, are we still going to be talking about LinkedIn and Twitter, or is there another emerging platform where, you know, which way, what sort of direction do you think these things are going into the near future?
Yeah, I think we'll still be talking about LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook. I think and YouTube, they'll essentially be the mainstays of social media. Obviously, you've got new platforms coming along all the time, Instagram, Pinterest and others. Where it's going to go in 5 years, I'm not exactly sure. I think social media has the power to kill off things like Google, who are we're search-based. I think more and more people are looking for their experience to be explained by their friendship connections. You'd rather get an endorsement from a friend about a restaurant than through a basic search. I think that's the way it's migrating. But I think we're also going to see more things around like social banking. I think you'll be able to potentially do your banking from any website besides your bank. And you'll be able to do any sort of accounting, whether it's your phone, telecommunications, banking, or any sort of private account from any website. I think that's what people, that's where we're moving towards. And you also got things like Google Glasses, tablet devices. I think that's probably the way. I'm no soothsayer, but I'm not exactly sure where it's going to go in 5 years. Hopefully I'll still be in a job for social media.
Got another question? I just got a tweet before I was tweeting out some of your tips and saying, look, LinkedIn may be a better way to promote yourself than Twitter. And someone tweeted back saying they think that LinkedIn is Facebook for fogies. So that was an interesting. Maybe we're all fogies.
Hi, Donna Walker again. Quick question on risks associated with social media. So the power of social media, use of internet, it's very easy to gain a reputation really quickly or lose one really quickly. And you hear stories about restaurants going under because they're on Urban Spoon and they get rated down. Or Travel Advisor, you know, is now the source where everyone goes to get their travel advice.
Yep.
Well, how do you think we, as professionals, can look to manage risks where it just takes one bad comment on a social media forum? How do you think we manage that? Because you can't respond in a way, in the same way in a social environment than you can in perhaps a more structured environment.
Definitely. It's a huge risk. You know, there's a huge risk for your identity to be not only harmed, but, you know, identity theft itself is an issue now, especially... Easy for me, I've got a very uncommon surname, so all the bad stuff out there actually is about me, not someone else with the same name. But I think it comes back to the simple point about education. Though, you know, it is difficult for businesses and organisations to deal with social media. I definitely accept that. But the businesses that do it worst usually delegate it to someone who shouldn't be doing it, don't have a policy in place, or haven't enabled their staff to do it properly. Now, if they address those steps, if they empower their staff, if they give them the right education, if they've got a good policy, they're going to be more likely to implement it successfully. They're going to be able to minimise the risks, they're going to be able to minimise the damage, and they're going to be able to deal with a crisis when it comes up. But if you're dealing with these things on an ad hoc basis and you're only doing bits and pieces here and there, I think that's where the danger comes in. Now, what happens online leaves an indelible footprint. It can't be removed. As bad as it is and as much as people want things to be removed, I think it stays there for almost an online eternity. So I think people have to be wary about that. I think it's actually far easier for adults to do it than it is for teenagers. For those people who are adolescents, they grow up knowing nothing else but to share everything online. Whereas adults who are now getting onto social media or getting onto Facebook last couple of weeks, they're far more reticent about sharing things, which is a good way to go. But for young people, they're going to grow up with a world where they know nothing else but to share. And they might realise once they become 19, 20, they probably shouldn't put all those things on Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram. But yeah, my simple prescriptive answer is the more people get educated about how to use it, the less likely they are going to be to run into some sort of damage.
Mark Tomlin. So just following on from that point, so aside from coming to sessions like this, where do you go to find out more about the pros and cons of LinkedIn, how to use it, and other social media sites?
Yeah, there's lots of, I guess, social media news websites that have got good bits of information. I think it's probably best to do it on an industry basis, to look to your colleagues and peers who are doing it well and to other companies who you may work with. Maybe it's before a meeting or after a meeting, you actually search if they've got a LinkedIn company page or a Facebook page and see how they're doing it. And that's always a better way of doing it to find exactly what's working and what's not working. Easy to do on an industry basis as well. I guess the more you use these mediums, the more comfortable you'll be with the technical aspects of them and how they actually work and operate, how things evolve. And the more I think you do things on tablet devices and iPhones, I think that's what they're intuitively made for, to do things on the go. I think the more you use them on devices like this, the more natural it becomes. That's probably the best way of doing things. And definitely peers and colleagues. I think, you know, education workshops like this definitely help. But without dishing my own presentation, I think they only pique interest. You know, they give you a little tidbit of information about what's possible and how it can be enabled. But it's presentation like mine's all well and good for 15 minutes. But if you don't follow it up, you know, in the next weeks, it's wasted.
I learnt to use... I was thrown into using Twitter because a week before a big conference, our accident compensation seminar 18 months ago, our guy we'd hired to do the Twitter left. He'd been with us 2 weeks. He decided it wasn't for him. So I was thrown in and had to do it. So I kind of got an account. And then when I got to the event, there was a guy who was a 60-something actuary who was on Twitter who I just said, what do I do? And he just took me aside for 10 minutes and showed me the basics. Here's what a hashtag means. Here's what an at symbol means. And I was away. So, and then I was asking my events team, how do you put a link in? And so you can't, you know, it's not, it's reasonably intuitive, some of this stuff.
Any more last questions?
It's Martin Hicklin. Just you mentioned identity theft before.
Yep.
Can you just tell us how big a risk it is, and what you need to do to minimise the risk that may be?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly significant risk. Now you might not be inclined to be on social media, but the easiest way to mitigate against this risk is to go out and essentially claim the real estate that is potentially in your name. So it could be, you know, with LinkedIn, you can have a unique username. So you can have linkedin.com/, in my case, Tommy Tutope. I think that's a good way of doing it for your own individual. Same with Facebook, same with Twitter. And then also, I think the easiest way to deal with it is also, it's a bit vain, but to do regular Google searches of yourself. I'm not saying daily.
And then post them on.
What's happened last night? but you know, monthly. You know, besides this sort of work, I do a lot of work in the education space around cyberbullying. Now, I dealt with one school where the students had started up a profile in the name of a teacher, and as that teacher started messaging a younger student, you know, horrendous episode. The police came and questioned the teacher, thinking it was their profile. A complaint was made to the school that inappropriate advances were being made to the student. The teacher almost lost the job and had a nervous breakdown. You know, career almost completely destroyed, all because students perceived it obviously as an innocent prank. But she had no, you know, I'm not saying she should have been on Facebook, but that's how easy it is to impersonate someone online. And everybody, no one wins out of that episode like that. The students, some of them got expelled. Teacher left the school, had a nervous breakdown. There's no winners. But sure, governments can be doing more to protect people's identity online. But the easiest way to navigate around is to essentially claim your real estate and verify it.
Okay.
All right, I think everybody gets an early lunch break.
I think so. Well, you've actually done very well. We're only a few minutes away. So
okay.
Thank you, Thomas. Looks like I'll be joining LinkedIn very shortly. But, yeah, just if everyone can thank Thomas, because I think it's been very informative.